to get started. Ken, thanks a lot for joining us, as always. Leeds United suffer their first defeat of the season at home to Ipswich. What did you make of that defeat?
Well, I must confess, I thought that Brentford, we should have beaten Brentford. I was surprised that that turned out to be a draw. But again, you know, there's something missing somewhere, isn't there? Because look at the record now, 1-1, lost one, undrawn, what is it, 5? Something's not clicking. I don't know what it is. I'm afraid I was away and couldn't watch the, because there's quite a few live games of Leeds early on in the season. Unfortunately, I was out of signal, so I couldn't see them. But it does make you wonder what's not clicking. The question whether usually a job safer, I think it is a silly one, because can't judge a man by 8 games. But obviously he has a problem in getting the team to work together and finish things off. And now we've played 8 games, which is nearly 20% of the season, believe it or not. It's time for it to get settled down and go. The fans have been amazingly supportive, and 21,000 for a midweek game in competition with live European Championship matches on the box is a tribute to the fans, but also hope they give him more time, don't start getting rested. I heard there are a few boos on at the Ipswich game. Well, we don't need that. And I can tell you, from a player and former player who knows about playing, that doesn't help you at all. When you're at home, you should cheer the fans on to the last, players on to the last minute. And maybe then you squeeze that extra bit of effort out of them. One thing you can't allow is players to let their heads drop. And booing them or criticising them during the game doesn't work at all.
There's been some big news coming out of Leeds United, of Adam Pearson stepping down as the Leeds United executive director. A lot of fans thought he brought a lot of stability to the club. What did you think about him stepping down?
Well, I've heard suggestions as the real reason, but it's not for me to speculate on that at the moment. But I would suspect it's quite a serious loss, although they're putting a brave face on it. The fact is that Pearson went to Chilino leading a syndicate to buy the club. And Chilino turned down the takeover bid. And a couple of days later, or a night later, he rang Pearson. They said, I'm not selling the club, but why don't you come and run it for me? And Pearson accepted and came back. And there is no doubt that he's done a unifying job. Because from noises I hear inside, at least now they've got somebody to make a decision and give them leadership. Now, Massimo said that the job's open for him if and when he decides to come back. When he's resolved his alternative situations, if he does. But that means the job's open for the time being. Which that means we've only got Massimo running Leeds United. Because I don't know if anybody else is there. Although Adam did say they had a good management team below him. So if they have, I haven't heard of any new names. But the problem is, at least in one direction, and one direction is really symptomatic of problems elsewhere, there's absolute chaos in handling the outstanding legal and commercial disputes behind the scenes. And Cellino gives the impression, first of all, he makes a decision 2 or 3 days later, he forgets it or changes his mind. It's ultimately going to lead even to bigger problems in running the club. And eventually, if there's turmoil inside the club, but away from full parts, it eventually leaks to full parts. So Chiellini, I don't know, he seems to have a lot of other problems that he's played at the moment. He should really, at the moment, concentrate on getting these outstanding problems sorted out. He's not helped by the fact that the lawyers he's employing at the moment, more like traders in Arab Bazaar, they're attacking problems, they dispute and argue every point going, and make silly offers in settlement of legitimate claims, which, of course, they're told to get stuffed. You remember Mrs. Levy's harassment claim, which was she won an appeal, and costs and damages were awarded. Haven't heard whether that's been settled or not. Has been settled. The Massimo should say so. It's a box tick. We've still got ongoing problems with West Ham. I mean, nobody would have given Sennels, the lawyers, instructions to file the papers. Now, Leeds have won the case against Preston. Sorry, Preston. West Ham. Won the case against West Ham. And costs have been awarded to Leeds. But all that happens is you have to file the papers so that the amount of costs can be assessed by the court. And that money is then awarded to Leeds, and Weston has to pay them. But for some other reason, nobody at Leeds will give them any instructions. I mean, on the other hand, got Weston suing for libel in London, and Weston, because he was being challenged about it, because he always hadn't got time to do things he's supposed to be doing in case in Jersey, he said, somebody said to him, well, you've still got time to do your another coke case. He said, well, I'm having nothing to do with it. No, there's never a lot to do with it. My lawyer said, I've got a case and I'll sign up and we'll get on with it, which found they're doing. But the case in Jersey, helpful against his case in England. So, again, why don't we get on with it?
On Uwe Rosler, with Adam Pearson leaving, do you think the future might look bleak for him now, especially with the results that have already come before him?
Well, I'm not sure that Pearson appointed Rosler anyway. But with one win in eight games, if you count in the League Cup defeat, clearly, as I was saying earlier, there's a question mark hanging over him, but he should be given more time. But now he and the players have got to deliver. We've heard of Oslo, who so far, they've kept 11 men on the pitch. They've got to just roll their sleeves up, get stuck in, start picking up the points. Because the present league table isn't very encouraging. And of course, you then start seeing the gates slowly slide because the weather gets bad. So it's an interesting 4 weeks. We must be cheering them on, cheering Rosler, hoping the first, but because of the indecision that exists around Massimo, fear the worst.
And we've talked a little bit about Massimo Cellino. With him being back in solo charge now, how do you think he'll deal with that workload?
You have to ask him. I mean, the easiest way of dealing with a heavy workload is you look at a particular problem, make your mind up, make a decision, give yourself and get on with the next one. That's how I always deal with it. But if you spend your time meditating, ruminating, cogitating, and being indecisive, then the workload does get very heavy. Unless you have the ability to delegate, other people get on with it. And I frankly don't know any people there now who's there to back him up. But again, that's Cellino. This is a situation which Cellino got himself into, and Cellino got himself and the club out of it.
And if we'd like to move on to Elland Road, they're hosting the Rugby World Cup, the Rugby Union World Cup, on the 26th and 27th of September. What do you make of that?
Is it
League
or Union?
Sorry, I meant to say it's Rugby Union.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, of course, in Yorkshire, the big draw is League rather than Union. And I don't really know how strong Rugby Union is in Yorkshire. But obviously, the two games in the road will be a helpful income for the club. So they'll either get a fee or percentage of tickets. Because on top of that, they have all the catering, the parking. Well, no, council takes the car parking. They have all the catering, all the other add-ons, which will be a helpful, useful contribution to the club's finances. The only problem we have to worry about, of course, is the damage it will do to the pitch. Because simply, you know, rugby is a different type of game to soccer. And you do tend to, with all your scrums and your pushing and your digging a divot in the pitch to put your ball down when you're taking a free kick, will do damage to the pitch. And therefore it's a question of how good the ground staff are getting it back again, because if you want to play serious football, as in with kick and rush, then the more perfect, the better the pitch, the better the chance you have of players playing football, because they know when they hit a long pass, a precise pass to their colleague 20, 30, 40 yards away, he's relying on that ball when he hits the pitch to go perfectly where he hit it. So again, bumps and bumps, the ball can go anywhere. So that is a caution that we have to worry about a bit. But meanwhile, they say it's a great financial success. They say Leeds United get their fair share of it.
Yep, very much hope that they do. And one other big news story that's really developed over the weekend and has been for some months now as well, actually, is Jeremy Corbyn becoming leader of the Labour Party. What did you make of his election to the head of the Labour Party?
Well, to start with, I have to admit I'm a lifelong Conservative. So I must say that when Tony Blair got in, I was actually very pleased. I thought Major was poor, and I thought the way Blair talked, there was a chance for a great change. And of course, he was a disaster with two terrible wars, also a terrible loss of life. So when the Tories got back in 2010, that was a coalition. I thought at least they'd improved on Brown. Started trying to change things. So, of course, when you're a coalition, it's a compromise. You don't do things as you really want to do because the partner in the coalition doesn't want it. And similarly, you have to concede things to the coalition, which you wouldn't do if you're running your own ship. But the fact that Cameron and his merry men have now been in power since, May. And Labour have been in turmoil. It's been a pretty poor party for some time, driven by union domination and various factions. So when we came up to the election, they didn't have a really good Labour didn't have a really good leadership team anyway. Miliband was a disaster. because in Prime Minister Question Times, instead of making constructive criticism, just became very yabu personal slangy matches, which I thought was a disgrace for everybody involved. So when Miliband did a runner, if you like, said I'm stepping back, kind of adventures, then you had the four candidates, or five candidates, I remember now, of which Corbyn was one, who emerged out of the blue. If you like, be like Donald Trump in America. But the alternatives are pretty poor. I knew Burnham when he was a civil servant. I dealt with him when I was attempting to build Wembley. And did I say, I found him very weak and no particular strengths. The others I don't know, so Corbyn almost got the job by default. But now let's look at him. He's now the leader of the opposition party. He's a potential prime minister in waiting. And yet he's never done a day's work in his life, in the real world. He's no experience what it's like working Monday to Friday, getting your pay packet on Friday night. And like so many politicians, Labour and Tory alike, many of them haven't done a proper job. They had no experience working in the real world. They don't really understand the consequences of their would-be actions. Corbyn terrifies me. The only good thing I think about is he virtually guarantees the Tories another 10 years in power. Because he's okay mouthing generalities, but that's got to be specific. Remember that lovely phrase, I know what you're against. What are you for? And I remember having this debate throughout my business life. And all they talk is wishy-washy generalisations. When you get down to brass tacks, there aren't any answers. So Mr. Corbyn wants to raise workers' wages. Well, the Tories have done that. He wants to nationalise the banks. I'm not quite sure what improvement that would do. Wants to nationalise British Railways. But if you remember before denationalisation, British Railways was a terrible bloody mess. I know. I worked on it for 9 weeks, the age of 16 and a half, in the ticket office at Paddington Station. I spent a week to find out what it was like, 7 weeks to find another job, and a week to serve me notice. And then I went into the city, working as an accountant, finding out what really went on behind the scenes in companies. But Corbyn has none of this experience. So how can he possibly run a country, earn a company? I'm sure he's a charming man in his way, but I don't think he could run Egg and Spoon Race. But on the other hand, he's taken this job. He went for it. Nobody asked him to stand. He decided of his own will that he would become the leader of the opposition. And now he has a part to play. He must play it. And these silly things about not singing the national anthem at the recent commemoration service was cheap and stupid. Now there's talks he may not wear a poppy at Remembrance Day, but maybe he's wearing a white poppy. Well, what's the point he's trying to make? Whatever their politics, these brave men fought. They didn't want to go to war, they didn't go to the army. They were called up, fight for king and country. And they did. And they died in the hundreds of thousands. And that gives Corbyn, including Corbyn's freedom, behave like an irresponsible idiot if he wants to. But he should sing the national anthem. He should wear a red poppy on Remembrance Day, out of respect for those young men who died to make sure Great Britain's free today. And you can't demand respect. You have to command it by your actions, your speeches and your demeanour. You have to earn respect. Mr. Corbyn began a short crash training course to make sure he has behaved. I wish him well. But in return, so I think a lot of other people do. But he's got to stop behaving like a spoilt, petulant teenager, not like a responsible, mature minister. And watch the coming few weeks with interest.
Yep, I think we'll all be watching it very closely. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today, Ken?
Yeah, let's talk about the competition. Brighton, top of the table.
Top of the table, they certainly are.
Great game.
I'm really looking forward to this one, especially with Leeds United. If they can pick up a couple of wins in the meantime, absolutely cracking game. And what better way to watch it than in exquisite style, a three-course meal, complimentary matchday programme and team sheet, luxurious padded matchday seating on our private balcony, dedicated hostess drink service and bars facilities, and half-time tea, coffee and biscuits. And to enter...
What's also important, though, is we have the big screens in there, which means we show the early kickoff game, the evening late kickoff game, and of course you get feed from that great Jeff Stelling, who's giving you a continuous, non-stop commentary on how the results are, how the scores are going, and every other game in the UK. It's fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. There's no better way to watch Leeds United. Just to see how you can enter that competition. In 2006, Dennis Wise brought Gus Poyet to Leeds United as assistant manager. What club did Gus go to after his year-long spell with the Whites? Was it A, Brighton Hove Albion, B, Tottenham Hotspur, or C, Sunderland AFC? And to enter, you just need to text Yorks and your answer A, B or C to 84383. Text costs £1 plus your standard message rate. Entry to this competition closes on the 11th of October 2015 with winners chosen shortly after. And all the above information and forms, terms and conditions can be found on our website, radioyorkshire.co.uk.